This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Nick, did you get some booze?
No.
No?
I'm flying without. I'm a teetotaler right now.
So we're not going to be sipping some booze and spitting some news?
Oh, God.
No?
No.
It's the full hour happy hour.
We got to work tomorrow, so no fun.
Oh, I didn't get any either. I'm drinking tea.
Wow, all three of us are going to be sober at the same time? This really is a special occasion.
That means nothing.
I almost bought alcohol. Wouldn't that have been weird if I was the only one drinking?
Not really.
Come on, you know you got a box of wine up on your shelf there. I heard all about your new recording room. Don't tell me you don't have a wine shelf.
Listen, I have not had boxed wine in probably like 2 months.
What?
Breaking news. Yeah, it's true.
Did you graduate up to two buck, Chuck?
You should have the box up on a shelf above you and then have this long, like, plastic straw going up to
so you. Can exactly. Just... Gravity will do the work, right, Nick?
Yeah, just sip a little bit.
It just sounds like logic here. Just good sound logic.
No, I don't like it. I'm weaning off the box wine.
Aww.
Weaning off the box wine. Drinking seltzer, and wine and gin. Or not wine, water.
And gin.
Same thing. Same thing. You know, gin is Swedish for water.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually not true. But vodka is Russian for water.
Oh, jeez.
It's true. It means little water. You didn't know that? Look it up.
Nick, did you know that tequila is Mexican for water?
No, it's not. It's Mexican for tequila. Mexican for droppy pee.
First of all, it's Spanish for those things.
You should know. You're from California.
I'm from California. Mm. And I'm from Maine. Now I have to contend with French.
Has the show become? What has it?
I don't know. The last episode that I listened to, it was How to Build an Office.
Wait, breaking news. Nick. The intern is doing homework. I don't know if you know this.
Oh, that's impressive.
He has been listening to the one and only flagship podcast of the Nerdy Legion Network.
You know what my big takeaway is, Nick? Is over the, two or so years that you've been doing this, you've come a long way. Martin is still just like I remember.
That's just because you don't hear me as much as you hear Martin. we're both pretty bad.
Listen, I have to be like mildly serious on that other podcast because Paul takes it off the rails. And people have expectations there, you know? There's no expectations here. The bar is really, really low on this podcast.
It does say Valiant Central on it, so you would think that it's right there. Like Absolute DC, I'm guessing it's only D that they're talking about.
See, you get it.
Yeah.
Some of the listeners don't.
That's okay. We should really be just the Tangent Central podcast. That's what we should be.
No, what do you mean? We're prepared tonight. We have an actual topic of discussion for this flagship podcast. You know what our topic is? Intern, tell him.
It's nerd culture is what our topic, and tangents, and offices. But also, it's The Wildstorm, which I read and was very good.
It was very good. All right, that's the episode. Thanks for listening. You can find us all on Twitter, at Who's Paul, at Geekvine, at Nick Wetmore.
I am nothing if not concise on this podcast, on the other one.
Sure.
Not so concise there.
Yes.
What's the opposite of concise? That's what I am on the other one.
The opposite of concise is Paul Tesner.
Is being a Mac Daddy.
So we're finally doing our Wildstorm episode, Nick, that we promised 3 years ago.
We never promised.
No, we
just
did.
We had it on the backlog.
We did.
There wasn't a lot of people beating down our door to hear the history of Wildstorm comics, let's be honest.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, there's some people that really still love that stuff.
I agree.
I gotta say, in the last couple of days, I kind of want to hear about it.
No, I'm excited to hear about it. Hey, the whole point of my little bullet point there was no one's beaten our door down to hear about this other than maybe Daryl. But I've wanted to hear the history of Wildstorm without reading a dumb wiki about it.
I hear that Daryl's starting a Wildstorm podcast now, as a fact.
Ooh, I'll sign up on that.
As soon as this episode's over, as a matter of fact.
I like it.
he should be recording similar content. So I was thinking, you know, I read The Wildstorm, and I was thinking, who is the best person I know to talk to about Wildstorm?
That's me.
You're welcome, Paul.
Warren Ellis, of course, you know, would be much better than Martin, but second best, Martin, definitely.
It's true. Paul, you know, Nick, Paul received Stormwatch 1 through 25 for Christmas a couple years ago. And he talks so much garbage.
Oh, yeah.
So much garbage.
Oh, yeah.
It was so bad. And look at him now. Here he is, wanting to talk Wildstorm.
Yeah, The Wildstorm, the series that came out, you know, in current day, took all that stuff in the 90s that was so tempting, but then I'd read it and it just wasn't for me. I'll just say it nicely. It wasn't for me because it was bad. And it made it so good and put it all together.
Oh, you did.
I don't know if it's bad. I didn't care a lot for The Wildstorm. I did read...
Nor my favorite Wildstorm. That I recommend umpteen times. Planetary.
I read some Planetary. I liked it, but it wasn't the right time. So I didn't get very far in it.
Oh, I've heard from other people.
Nick, I have it on Hoopla. I have it on Hoopla right now.
Well, then there should be no excuse.
Nick, my life has changed. Digital comics have shown me the way.
It's
no more. See, you got to understand, before I was battling with the piles, the dreadful, drudging piles of floppies that were stacking up week after week, month after month, trying to catch up with those goddamn things.
Mm-hmm.
Then I discovered the joys of digital comics and realized that I could just ignore all the purchases I made indefinitely and read what I feel like reading right now.
See, yeah. Nick, so what Paul is saying is, had he been listening to this flagship Nerdy Legion podcast for the past 3 years,
Oh boy. He
would have already learned this lesson.
I just love that he poo-poos all of 90s comics, and now he's reading Claremont Paul Smith X-Men titles, which is fantastic.
Sure. To be fair, I'm only up to 83.
Well, hey, you're getting there.
Good.
I just finished the Brood Wars, as a matter of fact.
I mean, I've told you for quite some time, you have to lay some base down before all of a sudden you can, like, even take in the mediocre stuff. So you gotta read, like, Dark Knight to introduce you into, like, here, now you can read some mediocre Batman family stuff. Like, you gotta lay the good base down, and then you can
What did you just say?
All right, let me put it in my universe then. You gotta read the Todd McFarlane and the really good Spider-Man stuff, and then you can be like, here's the Clone Wars. It ain't that good, but if you want to read it, go ahead.
So, funny story, the first Spider-Man I tried to read, Clone Wars.
Yeah. Whoever threw that at you, if that was a comic book... Okay, when I worked at a record store and people were like, hey, what's good jazz music? I would recommend whatever is popular. So it's selling. Just here. It's Kenny G. Go listen to that. It's Grover Cleveland. Go ahead. Or Grover Washington. Go ahead, listen. Like, just because the mass, guess what? The mass is the mass. The majority of people do like the same stuff. So there you go. Knock your socks off. Mm-hmm. But just to, like, say, oh, you should listen to that or read that because it sells a lot, doesn't make a lot of sense. Just
to be fair, I just stumbled across it, and I bought it for a logical reason that would actually be right in line with your way of thinking. It was big, and it was good value for the dollar.
Yeah, for sure.
Until I read, like, two issues and was like, nope, this is going back.
Mm-hmm.
Then I traded it in.
Yeah, I can't blame you there.
You know, right now, The Wildstorm is a good value for a dollar, because it literally is a dollar.
It's a dollar? Oh, yeah, it's on sale in Comixology.
Yeah, it's on sale right now.
Yeah. You know, and I actually would have bought, so I read the first trade on Hoopla, which is, what, six issues, I think?
Six issues, yeah.
I would have bought everything else that's out, except it's only on sale for $2, and that just goes against my digital purchasing morals.
It's 99 mm-hmm. cents, dude. 99
no,
cents
no, no,
an
no,
issue.
No. I looked, the issues beyond the first trade are $1.99.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And then
yeah.
11 I is $3.99 because that just came out.
Yeah, I as soon as I finished reading the trade yesterday morning, I went on to look to buy more because I wanted more.
Paul is becoming my young Padawan here, and I'm loving it.
Well, that's why he's interning.
I loved because I was right there with him. I was like $1.99. Ah, screw that. And then I finished the first trade, and I'm like, oh hell yeah, I'm spending $1.99 on this and Mike Spray. But then to Paul's point, it wasn't the $1.99 that stopped me. It was the second arc's not even wrapped up. So why am I buying this stuff just to hold on to it for the next 4 or 5 issues to be on sale again? Because I'm not going to get roped into spending $4.99 on them. Nope, not doing it.
Issue 12 comes out in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm not doing it.
And it's the last issue of the second arc.
Eh, that's all right. I can wait.
Shame on you.
I'm reading plenty of other stuff. I can wait.
Yeah, see, that's where I am. I'm trying to finish up some physical stuff to mail off to people to clear out stuff that I'm not keeping. And then I have my Hoopla account just went up to 10 a month, so I just downloaded a whole bunch of stuff. I downloaded that Batman You're Reading, Nick. I downloaded pretty much everything that I could remember that people were talking about. I downloaded
good
what I could find, at least.
And it's a hell of a lot easier to read something for free. You forgive so much.
Yeah.
Because it's free.
I couldn't read 52, though. I tried to read 52, and it's not because I didn't think it was good. I have a real hard time with DC events. That's what I've come to discover. I don't have the same familiarity with the characters to where, like, just seeing the characters kind of drags me along. Like, I could read a Marvel event a lot more successfully than a DC event, but DC events, I just go a little bit, I start thinking, I'd rather just be reading about one of these characters and getting to know them better. So I stalled up on 52. That's the only one that I just couldn't push through on.
I'm good on events as long as they're not weekly and as long as they're not DC Metal.
52 has so much history attached to it, I can totally see how you'd bail off that.
Yeah, I could wing the Marvel history. The DC history, like outside of Batman stuff, I just don't know enough.
Yeah, it's believe me, everyone has an opinion, and there's always going to be a certain sect that loves whatever you hate. They don't care. They love
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And let them love it. Hey, not everything's made for me. Trust me, there's plenty of titles you guys talk about that just go right over my head, and that has nothing to do with their quality or how much I respect your opinions. It's not for me. So
exactly.
Rock it out.
Yeah, Mike was talking about that on the latest Mike M's Weekly Reads. Because he was talking about how he can't get into, like, Strangers in Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, like, these fools on Discord all day, all they talk about is Strangers in Paradise. And here's Mike who reads 300 comics a week, and he can't get it.
You know what's really funny, though, about Strangers in Paradise is most of the people talking about it haven't read it. Or just started reading the new one. Like, Jay, I sent him, cause I actually sold him the omnibus that I had of it, and then I'm just purchasing it little by little on Comixology now. Mm-hmm. So he hasn't had time to read that. That sucker is gigantic. And I just, like, I got Ronnie hooked on Terry Moore starting with Rachel Rising, and then he loved Motor Girl, I love Motor Girl, Jay, Mike, so, like, you know, we were all talking about Motor Girl all the time. That ended. And Strangers in Paradise, you know, starts up. Nobody's read it. I'm the only one. Well, I mean, Jay's probably read some now, and I know some people are reading the new issues, but I'm like the only one who has read any significant amount of the old stuff, but they all talk about it.
Yeah, but it's just like Mike not liking the Hellboy universe. It's like, you know what? If you want to stay out of a universe, go right ahead. There's plenty of universes I don't even touch. I would touch if somebody sent me something, sure, I would read it because guess what? It was free. But am I looking for it through Hoopla or like the library where I essentially can get it for free? No, because I'm still stuck in my reading of my Comixology purchases from, as I say, low so my wife can't hear. from October 2016. I'm a year and a half behind, and I keep buying. Oh.
The sales are just so good, though.
I know. But that's why I don't want to grab Strangers in Paradise. Why would I grab that omnibus from the library? What, so I can read 30 pages? Or I just push my other reading to the side? Oh, I can't do that.
Yeah, you just wait till you get caught up enough, and the sales always come back on Comixology. So if you see something you want, but you know it's not the right time, you might wait 6 months or more, but
it'll come back around. I did that on Grendel for quite a while. So I have
patiently waited for many a Dark Horse sale to fill up on all my Hellboy and BPRD and all that kind of good stuff. Now, I have every Hellboy and BPRD trade, except actually I don't have Hellboy and Hell because I read that on Hoopla, but I'll purchase that at some point, so I have it handy at all times.
Yeah, and then when you're in the mood, you grab it and go.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Oh, God.
Let's talk about this book.
Yes.
So this is a reimagining of the Wildstorm universe from the 90s. Which is no longer a separate thing, right? DC purchased Jim Lee and company. What year was that, Nick? Like, 03?
DC purchased Jim Lee?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
You must have been hard up.
It was a big old splash, too.
Yeah, it was a big old splash. And I mean, look at him now, right? He's a co-publisher.
Hell yeah.
He's set for life. Which is kind of funny, you know, like, the reason all those guys left Image was to not work for the man, and now Jim Lee is.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so DC bought the Wildstorm universe, I think mostly for like the colorists and the inkers, right? Kind of like the same reason Marvel bought Ultraverse or Malibu.
Yeah, at least for me, it felt like they could have cared less about any of the property. They just wanted all the talent. They needed all that talent in there.
Yep, which makes sense. And
sure,
they didn't. I don't think they used, to your point, they didn't really use the characters very well for quite a while, I would say. I mean, there were some pretty good titles when they started rebooting them, but they tried to bring some DC characters in to try to make it work.
Yeah, it was like New 52, wasn't it? Like when they relaunched that?
Yeah, they did some of that at that era also, yeah.
Yeah, because that was like Authority, had Martian Manhunter in it.
Yep, yep.
Wasn't Grifter? Didn't he have his own series for a little bit?
Grifter had his own book. Voodoo had her own book.
Yeah, crazy.
Majestic showed up in Superman.
Yes.
There were quite a few things. So I mean, they tried, but I don't think it worked very well. It's it's hard to shoe in like a whole universe into an existing one, right?
But I loved out of that. I did enjoy the first arc of Grifter. And I can say this, I really enjoyed Authority when Paul Cornell was writing it.
Yeah.
But then and I love me some Jim Starlin, but as soon as he started on the book, mamma mia, there was no modernizing going on then, in my opinion.
Well, and I think Joe Casey's Wildcats was pretty good also.
Oh, God, that was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But aside from that, so after a while, I think all those characters went by the wayside. I don't think we saw anybody except like Grifter showed up in a few things. I don't know if you guys saw the Flashpoint movie, but Grifter's in that.
Yeah, I did. I did check out that. That was bizarre to say the least.
It was weird, and I mean, he was just like in and out, right? It's when Barry first goes to the Flashpoint universe, and Zoom's like running around them under a bridge or whatever. And Grifter just kind of like walks by. It was so weird, you know what I mean?
Almost winking at a camera.
Yeah, exactly. But aside from that, not a whole lot. They tried to do did a few volumes of Stormwatch. They did Authority again. They did Wildcats, and they didn't sell because they weren't quite the same thing. And fast forward to 2017, Warren Ellis, who is the greatest writer of all time. Well, I don't know about that, but pretty close. I like
the statement, though.
Yeah, he was tasked with rebooting the universe. And I don't know whose idea that was. I'm going to assume Jim Lee's like, listen, you paid all this money for me, you know what I mean?
I would love to know who reached out to him first.
I mean, it's got to be Jim, right?
Because you know Warren Ellis ain't going to be like, hey, DC, here's something I want to do. He has plenty of other publishers he could go to.
But you got to think, too, like, out of anybody that worked in the Wildstorm universe, the stuff that Ellis did was probably the most impactful out of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Aside from, like, when the universe first launched, right, you had Jim Lee and Brandon Choi on Wildcats, and, like, that was pretty heavy. But, you know, Wildcats was kind of like, it was almost like an X-Men rip, because Jim Lee was working on X-Men. at that time. And it was kind of that, but at the same time, like, it had its own identity, right? Because of the alien connection. But, you know, I sent Paul that Stormwatch 1 to 25. Stormwatch was my favorite Wildstorm title by far. And then Wildcat's second, I'd probably say, like, Gen 13. But, you know, the stuff that I sent Paul was pretty typical superhero fare, I would say, for that time.
You know me, I have to peel back the onion.
Sure.
Why would you say those were the top three for you? Like, what called out to you? Was it just like, this is like X-Men, and I dig X-Men?
Well, yeah, for me, like, Wildcats was that, right? So, at that era, X-Men was hot. And having a team like the Wildcats that was very reminiscent of that, you know, had me excited.
And they left it. They left a huge void, didn't they?
Oh, of course.
When everyone left, like, I mean, Marvel was scrambling, taking away their top talent from their number one comic at the time.
Right. Well, and he took Wills too, right? Wills Portacio. He was on the other X-Men book at the but I don't think Wills didn't do much. He did Wetworks at Wildstorm, which was freaking awesome. Like, I couldn't wait for that book to come out. But the problem with Wetworks was it was constantly delayed.
Inconsistent release schedule.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Because
the first issue came out, and I think the launch of the book was delayed a few months. And then it finally came out. And then issue two was on time. And then I think by issue three, it was delayed like a couple months. And then like every issue after that would be like a few months longer before it came. And then Wills left and they had somebody else come in and do the book. It was just, it wasn't quite the same.
Gotcha.
Wetworks is pretty awesome though. It was like a covert military unit who go to investigate this event. And it turns out that there's these crazy vampire things there. And they all become endowed with this, like, golden symbiote that gives them superpowers.
Oh, wow.
And somehow that's tied to this these vampires that we get. And then, like, after Wills left, like, it just became, like, let's go fight the vampires. And But to go back to your point, yeah, like, Wildcats was like X-Men, but different, right? Because there were aliens. You didn't know that at first, right? Like, The villains that they fought, the Demonites, you could tell they were aliens, right? They looked like the aliens from the Aliens movies, kind of, but more deformed. Matter of fact, in the Wildstorm, you do see a Demonite. What issue is that? Like issue 5, I think. One shows up when Zelig goes to investigate the shootout at the bunker.
Yes.
They were like that, not as big as what we see in this iteration of Wildstorm. But, like, you know, similar to that. And then it turns out that the Wildcats are, like, the opposite forces. They were the Cherubim, which is a different alien race. And they were, like, at war for millennia. And they brought that war to Earth when they crash-landed. But it was really interesting because all the characters were very different. And they had cool backstories.
Your top three are all team books.
Yes.
Interesting. Yes. No Spawn.
Well, I'm talking Wildstorm.
Oh yeah, Wildstorm. Sorry,
Spawn isn't Wildstorm. Yeah.
No, my bad.
I did love Spawn. I think of that early Image stuff. Spawn is probably number one. Stormwatch would be two, and then I'd probably put like Witchblade and Darkness up there.
Gotcha.
And then go to some of the. And I guess Youngblood would be up there too, but Youngblood faded very quickly because it was a lot of flash and not so much substance. but like the art for the Wildstorm books were like top notch, you know what I'm saying? Because all the guys in that studio were artists, and so of course like they were in the big Marvel and DC books, and now here in their own stuff, it was exciting. So at one point Ellis did come in, and I think you and I talked about the story, Nick. I can't remember what issue it was. Oh yeah, that's right. It was the Wildcats alien. One shot crossover.
Yes.
Paul, did you ever read that?
No.
Okay. So I'm not going to make you go listen to the episode. Although since you're interning, maybe you should. But Nick and I talked about this at one point. When Ellis was brought on, he was brought on to write Stormwatch. And Ellis is, he's a different sort, right? And he agreed to come on, but he wanted to change, like, the whole thing. He's like, what you guys are doing just doesn't work for me. I'm going to kill everybody and just make my own team. And that's pretty much what he did. But the way he did it was odd. He wrote the Wildcats Aliens crossover. It was a one-shot. Like, the Wildcats, like, don't show up in the entire book. They're in, like, two panels. So it was weird they would call it Wildcats Aliens when the Wildcats barely show up. But it's a story about Stormwatch. And the Xenomorphs from the Alien movies show up at Skywatch, which is Stormwatch's base of operations, and pretty much just start killing fools. And Stormwatch goes to try to stop them, and the aliens just kill all of Stormwatch. Except like Jackson King, which he hasn't shown up in the Wildstorm yet, and Trelane, who does show up in the Wildstorm. But everybody else died. They all got killed by aliens. And then the Wildcats show up, they're like, oh, like, here we are, everybody's dead, let's go back to Earth. And as a result, like, you know, Stormwatch had to rebuild the entire team. And that's when Ellis brought in new people to the team, right? So you had, like, Midnighter and Apollo, which have become huge for DC. Like, Midnighter had his own solo run. Your favorite wrote that, Steve Orlando. And it was freaking awesome. Really, really. But not a high seller, so it was canceled. And then they did a four-issue miniseries, Midnighter and Apollo, because they're a couple, right? It was like the first openly gay couple in comics.
Mm-hmm.
And there were Batman-Superman analogs, right? Apollo is Superman is Batman. Anyway, so he brought them in. That's when he brought, oh God, what's her name? Jenny Sparks?
Yeah.
Which is one of your favorites.
Yes.
The Engineer didn't pop in yet. Because I think, I'm trying to think what issue it was, but it was pretty late in Stormwatch. Like, issue, like, 39, I want to say. I think it ran 50 issues. And so he started bringing these new people in until they canceled the book and relaunched it as The Authority. Which, Paul, you haven't read it, but you should. And I know Nick and I, we did an episode on The Authority. And The Authority was just something else, dude. Right? Because when they start going into this, like, multidimensional travel thing, things get really funky. But that's what Ellis does, right? He's got a very big imagination.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with Ellis a lot of times is he'll start really strong and then he just kind of gets bored and whatever he's working on kind of disappears.
Yeah, and that was right around the time that, like, was he with Brian Hitch at the time?
Yeah, Hitch was doing it, which is actually really funny because Hitch has been doing Justice League for DC for years now. I think he started with the New 52. He was writing and drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they went to Rebirth, like, Justice League didn't reboot. It kept going for a little while. And then they had a different Justice League book come out. Because he was doing Justice League of America, I think it was. They let him keep going to, like, finish a story. But if you read that, I mean, the way that he paces the stories and the way he lays out the panels, you can tell that he worked with Ellis for it, because
yeah, my big draw to that was I remember somebody describing that title as it's the first time you're going to see a comic in widescreen,
mm-hmm.
like widescreen theater, and that's exactly how it felt to me.
Yep.
Everything was very horizontal, which was sort of neat at the time.
Neat at the time, and it was new at the time also.
Yeah.
Right? Not many people were doing it. Mm-hmm. Now everybody does it.
Yep.
But all that started with Authority. And
yeah, that was a good run.
Yeah, it was a great run. And then, you know, that led to other things. So Planetary, for example, came out of that. And then Ellis just kind of disappeared.
Yeah, he always has great grand visions, but it almost seems like he takes his notebook and leaves with it.
Yeah.
And just like all the puzzle pieces are still on the floor, but like no one has any clue how to assemble that puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah, Ryan and I were talking about that a couple days ago because Ellis was doing Shipwreck at Aftershock. And it's a very Ellis book, very like esoteric. And,
yeah, I loved it.
But the thing is, like issue 5 came out. Issue 5 was delayed. I think it was like a month delayed. And I think there's only one issue left in the series, and it hasn't been solicited. Like, I haven't seen it. They've solicited through, like, April now. It's been kind of gone for a while.
That sounds like typical Ellis.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, he always does that, right? Like, he'll work on a book, and then, like, he's like, I have this other idea. Let me just go do that instead. And you never get the resolution.
He's the cat with the ball of string. He's off on his next project.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless it's like Transmetropolitan or something like that, where you know he has a beginning, middle, end.
Yep, right. And he did that with Paul's favorite, Derek Robertson.
Mm-hmm.
Transmetropolitan?
Yeah.
I got that queued up on Hoopla, too.
There you go. It's really good, Derek Robertson art.
I also just purchased the first volume of The Authority.
Nice. Ooh. Very nice.
Well, $6 for 12 issues. That's a good price point there.
Yeah, that's a steal. Oh, is that that's on the sale, isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyways, they must have paid him a buku load of money to come and do this thing, right?
I would think, yeah.
And I can guarantee you it went something like this. Jim calls Warren. He's like, listen, it's Jim. I don't even know how Jim Lee talks, so I'm just pretending.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Warren, it's Jim. We want you to do this Wildstorm thing. He's like, we want to bring the Wildcats back. We want to bring Stormwatch back on blah, blah, blah. And we want you to head this new imprint and do that. And Warren's like, yeah, that sounds cool. But how about we do this instead?
Mm-hmm.
And Jim was like, no, we have this great idea. We're going to do this. We'll have like 6 books. You're at the head of it. You, whatever direction you want to do. Warren's like, how about this? We'll do 1 book. I'm going to do 25 issues. You're going to pay me buku load of money. Don't fucking call me again. And Jim's like, all right, click.
Well, didn't you? I think you also forgot to say, and I'm going to put them on my own earth. I want everything on an island. I don't care about your events. I don't care if you want guest appearances. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yes, exactly. Which, by the way, was a little weird because we also have the Wildstorm Michael Cray, right? Which spins off of the first arc of the Wildstorm because Michael Cray mm-hmm. plays a big part of the story. But the weird thing about that book is that Justice League characters show up. And Michael Cray is like contracted to kill them. But the thing is, they're not the Justice League. It's definitely on an alternate Earth because these are like kind of evil-ish versions of the Justice League.
That sounds like typical what Warren Ellis would be putting into his comics.
Yeah. Anyway,
Mark Miller.
Or Mark Miller. Like, you're right.
Yeah.
But we're not going to talk about Michael Cray. It is good, though. It's really, really good. I'm not a huge fan of the art. I can't remember who the artist is. But the story is really good.
I wish they had the whole first arc. I would have picked it up during the sale.
Yeah, that's not through. I think it's only, 4 or 5 issues in right now.
That sounds about right.
I'm a couple of people. Not because I don't want to read it. Just sure. So, but that's pretty much it, right? So it's the Wildstorm is a finite series. It's 25 issues. The whole thing is going to be Warren Ellis, fingers crossed, and John Davies Hunt, who's also inking himself and coloring himself and doing the covers.
Mm-mm-mm.
You know that's a cushy-ass job, too, because you don't have to worry about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I guarantee you, when Jim pitched Warren, Warren's like, nah, we'll do this instead. He's like, and I'm going to put John Davies Hunt in this book. Don't fucking put him on any other projects. He just works on the Wildstorm. I guarantee
that's all right. Jeff Johns isn't the only person that can like hold artists from going anywhere else.
Oh yeah, he does that with what's his face, Gary Frank.
Hell yeah, he does.
And Fabok.
He used to do with Ivan Reese as well, but uh-huh. not anymore.
Well, Ivan Reese has his own problems.
Wow.
Anyway, we're not talking about that either. So, all right. So right now we're 11 issues in. The first arc is 6 issues now.
Yeah.
I'm curious on how you guys felt about this first arc. Because, Nick, you're a little more familiar with the universe than Paul is. But not as familiar with things as I am. Because I'm going to give you my very quick first impression. I read this, and I'm like, okay, so the new issue comes out tomorrow, right? Because I have to find out what's going on. Because the take that we're getting on these characters is so fresh and exciting. And I already know a lot of the backstories for these characters, but the way that Warren Ellis is changing them, interweaving them, is something completely different, right? Because this is not just like a superhero team book. This has become like an espionage thriller. So, Nick?
Yes?
What are your first impressions?
Well, let's just say Warren Ellis is a man of the craft of creating comic books and creating universes that feel very fresh. And it feels the first 10 pages of the first issue brought me into this universe that I barely touch, barely know, can't recognize any of these characters really. And it's just a woman who sees a person. The first blush when I'm first reading it was a person who's committing suicide out an office window. And then all of a sudden she activates this weird biotechnical armor, flies up in the air and rescues him.
That was literally the point where I just went like, ooh, this is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So before that, I felt real lost. Because it started, didn't the first issue start off with, and forgive me, I'm not good with character names until I get used to them, but it was the Skywatch agent that guy that ends up getting like sent out on this.
Well, so you're talking about Michael Cray.
That's like she's investigating something right at the beginning, right?
Oh, yeah, Zealot.
No.
Zealot.
Yeah, at the very beginning. So, like, it starts off with that. I don't know what the hell's going on. Then it kind of moves on with a bunch of characters that I don't really know what the hell's going on. He gets thrown out a window, and then, you know, what Nick just said happens. And that's when I was like, ooh. That was, like, my reading Unity and seeing, you know, Eric, Exo Manowar, shoot somebody's head through somebody else's chest. Just be like, oh, yes, I want more of whatever this is. I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
It definitely woke me up a little bit, got me into it right there.
And see,
one more.
And that whole sequence blew me away, right? Because I recognized that character as Zealot. She was part of the Wildcats in the original iteration. And she was kind of like the muscle, right? She was like a very skilled warrior. So she was always like the first to go into battle. Whereas here, she's more in the background, right? She's not quite cleanup. But I mean, she's kind of cleanup, right? Like, she ties loose ends.
Yeah. She's not cleanup. She's like the stage before cleanup. She's investigating, and then the cleanup guy shows up.
Yeah, she ties the loose ends. But the cool thing was, when the scene opens up, she's looking in the mirror, and she's got the dot on her forehead, and then the stripes coming down her cheeks. And in the original Wildcats, that was her like war paint. She always had that on, the dot on her forehead and the stripes on her face. Except here, it's turned around, because the reason she has it is she got into a fight with these guys, and she has their blood on her face.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So to me, I was just blown away, right? Because it's a direct callback to the character, but twisted into something new.
Yeah, because I knew this was from something, I could tell that was like fan service stuff that, you know, draws in the old fans right away with the familiar stuff. If I didn't know anything about this, then I just, like, it all would have been, you know, right over my head. Not that it was pretty much right over my head anyways, but
I have, and I mean, Martin, we've talked about this umpteen times. I have no problem when a story's over my head, as long as I'm entertained or engaged with it. And I was engaged from the very beginning. I love that little part, and it just made me realize, once I know more of this universe, going back and rereading this, I'll be able to pick those little points out. I loved the woman in the mechanical armor. That's the engineer, right?
That's the engineer, yeah, Angela.
Okay, we don't know her. Well, I don't know her as that at that point. But I loved even, and this is what makes Ellis really good, the scene before that where she bumps into her manager and his boyfriend and asking him, how can I get money to do R&D to get, you know, I want to investigate this. How do I? And he walks through this corporate, like, pretty much you have to fill out like 10 form to be able to like get this to, you know, happen. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is such boring corporate BS that like normally I would just be like, oh, this is a lot of words. But I was just completely transfixed because I didn't know if she was like an addict or what. Like, I could tell she was having a bad day, but I couldn't tell what the hell was going on. But I just wanted to keep reading more and more and more. And it's real easy that somebody's falling out of a window. And guess what? The end of her day is that person lands on top of her and she's dead. And then we switch up to the window and sees what happens up there. You know, it's like, that would be the way out.
I am so right there with you on all that, Nick. I was halfway expecting her to get splatted by that dude.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been so easy to happen. But oh my god! And then I love that it goes up to the office window, and then people are like discussing, like, okay, we have to do damage. Like the entire arc was, okay, we have to do damage control, mm-hmm. or okay, we have to okay, this happened. That's our armor that I just saw on TV. Okay, how do I track that down? Like, for me, it was all just like intersecting points, trying to race to get their conclusion, whether it's truth or lies. It didn't matter, but they wanted, like, I want to know what the hell's going on. Just get, mm-hmm. you know, put my boy on it, whoever that is. Open up. And then as soon as they opened up, what was it, issue 2, where they opened up that rift and like 4 people walked through it, and it looked like this weird like space in between space world while they're like going to the like crime scene. I was just like, what the heck? Like, everything that Ellis threw out, whether it was stuff that you recognized, Martin, or this is all brand new to the universe, everything I was like, I want all of this explained. And it reminded me of like, hey, here's a schematic for the Justice League orbital satellite station. Hey, here's a breakdown of the Danger Room. Hey, here's a schematic of the Fantastic Four car. You know, like, all of that stuff is just like, yes, I want to learn more of that. I just want more and more information. And I could not get enough of like reading any and all of the extras. This is something that, like, if he put out the script for issue 1, I would want to read the script just to see, like, did you put any nuggets that I need to read?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that scene you mentioned, I mean, that's kind of a callback to the Authority, right? In Planetary, when they're what do they call it? The Bleed.
Yeah.
Right, because the ship can travel through dimensions through this like weird interdimensional thing called the Bleed.
I was hoping that's what it was, but Ellis never called it out as such.
And that's what I'm saying, right? Because he has to walk a very fine line, right? Because a lot of people reading comics may never have read these books in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
right? Like you guys didn't read most of that stuff.
Mm-mm.
But if you are versed in the universe, you start seeing these threads that if you don't know anything about it, you might not catch. But it's still intriguing the way that he's doing it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of that throughout this arc. And once you guys get to the second one, there's even more of that stuff. Because in the second arc, go ahead.
Even in the first arc, the old boss who is up in the satellite, but he came down to chew out the one woman. And then he walked out and somebody says, like, yeah, somebody threw out like, ugh, he's the biggest pain in the ass there ever is. I can't even believe he took time out to go from his ivory tower down and visit us for 10 minutes just to chew me out. Mm-hmm. Like, have a drink with me.
And
like, that's for me is just, that is some fascinating dialogue. Like, how he is not writing plays or television is beyond me. Because I was completely transfixed on 2 people having vodka together. Like, right. that was, but also when I saw Bendix and him shoot her a look, and like, I sort of put it together with my reading of some of the Wildstorm universe back in the day. But then when I saw him up in the satellite thing, I was like, oh my gosh, that's that guy. And it just, it's great that it's like, and when I got back into Capes and Cowls, I was doing the same thing when all of a sudden, like, I'd be part of a Marvel event and I'd have no clue who these characters are. And then all of a sudden I'd go back and read like a trade 5 years previous to what I currently would be reading. And I would just like slot that into the memory file of like continuity and be like, oh my God, now that totally makes sense. Okay, now I get that. Yeah, it's fun. It's really, really fun.
That's one thing that really stood out to me about all of this is, I mean, how many characters do you get introduced to in 6 issues? There are a ton of characters you get introduced to.
Yeah.
And I've read other stuff like this where there's a lot of different moving pieces and you don't really know who the good guys are, who the bad guys are. Are there really good guys or bad guys? Are they all bad guys? Where you read through it and there's all this action going on, but you never really give a damn about anybody because you don't really get a grasp of who or what anybody is. And you get like a good sense of at least most of these characters. really quickly and really easily. So there's, you know, it's like you leave it feeling like you want to see more of a lot of different people in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's also the difference between storytelling 30 years ago and storytelling now, right? Because the world that we live in now is a lot more about the grays, and it's not so much black and white.
Yeah, right? Can I brace Paul on Ellis? He had a character in Planetary who's called the Drummer. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Martin, but his powers were never fully explained. And you never really got an origin issue of him through the entire series. Even though at the end of the series, I would never be like, ah, that's a missed opportunity. I just looked at it like, that guy was really cool. I wish I would have got a little bit more on him. But like what I got of him was fast. Like all of the people that are like, go investigate that. Or like, let me break down this weapon for you. Or we're here and I'm trying to rescue. Like it's enough. It's written well enough that I'm like, God, I hope nothing happens to that, you know, that Angela, because she seems really freaked out that she has this thing inside of her. Like, it's interesting. Like, the mystery alone is enough for me to be like, okay, I'll go down that road. Like, I don't need a flashback issue of, like, this is how I stole the armor.
Yeah, and see, I'd prefer not to have too much of that either. Like, I feel like a lot of time talking to comic fans in the broader sense, it's like they get pissed off if everything isn't just completely explained and laid out to them. Mm-hmm. Stories are so much more interesting if you're left in the dark. If you know everything, it's not like, what's the fun in that? Yeah. You know, some characters you need to not know too much about. Like, they need to have the mystique, and if you take the mystique away, you're taken away from the character. You know, like you mentioned the Drummer. I don't remember how much I read of Planetary, but it was at least half a dozen issues, probably. You know, it was a decent enough chunk. It wasn't nothing. But the Drummer kind of slipped my mind until you just mentioned him. But yeah, like reading Planetary, there was a lot of like, I don't really know what the hell's going on. And at the time I was trying to read it, it just wasn't the right time to read something like that. Whereas like reading this, where I went in, I was like, I don't have a damn clue what's going on. Didn't really matter. The action, like you mentioned, the action really drives it along. So even if you're not feeling connections to the characters or, a sense of understanding of what's going on, you just flow with the action. But mm-hmm. then, like, if you're not really into the action, like, the characters can drag you along, like you said with, what's her name? The girl with the armor in her?
Angela,
yeah. You know, you're like, I'm concerned for her. She seems... you know, like, she's having a tough time right now.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see things turn out a little bit better for her, you know? It's like, yeah. you get concerned for some characters. Other characters, you just want to see them do what they do. Other characters, you want to see them get smacked around by somebody. There's so many characters you get introduced to so quickly, but it's so easy to find connections to things you want to see in this, whether it be action or characters or... you know, for me, I know very, very little about the old stuff. Like reading the little bit of Wildstorm that I read that Martin sent me, I knew a little bit about what's he called, the Weatherman?
Yep, Bendix.
Yeah, I vaguely knew who he was from that. Like I remembered him from that. So that was one of the few things that was like, oh yeah, I remember that. And then Wildcats. I never read Wildcats, but I was always aware of Wildcats. So them suddenly being like, this is a covert action team in the wild. They're Wildcats. I was like, yes, yes.
Yeah, Bendix just reminds me of like, okay, you might not have ever read Spider-Man, one lick of Spider-Man your entire life, but you know who Norman Osborn is. Like looking at Bendix, it's like, oh gosh, like what's he up to? What's he going to be doing? Like,
He's a lot more personable here, I think, than previously.
Yeah, they do. They make him. I almost said that they humanize him, but I don't quite think that that's the right way to put it. They make him relatable to at least some extent by having him, in private with his assistant. He's able to let his guard down, you know. And they joke, and she gives him shit, and doesn't just like, you know, she's not just there to just yes him. Like, I liked that. Like, it did, because you see him before that, and you're just like, this guy's a dick. He's just going to be a dick to people. And then you see that, and it's like, all right, this is kind of fun to read now. It's not just watching him be an asshole and not get anything more out of him.
Well, that's because in public he has to be that way, right?
Oh, yeah.
But that's what makes him more relatable, because, I mean, we all know people like that, right? Like, your boss at work might be a dick to you, but they're not being a dick because they want to be a dick. That's just they're exerting their authority, right? They have a job to do.
And that's what he said that he is a dick because he likes to be a dick, though, in this.
Well, yes. But, I mean, I say that kind of stuff, too.
He seemed very Steve Jobs-ish.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, he just a tyrant behind the scenes to people. But then if I was to read, like, a press release or somebody talking about what he wants done, me as a fan of the product, I'd be like, hell yeah, chew them out for that. Yeah, you're right. I want that.
Well, but he has to be. I mean, he's in charge of Stormwatch, right? And they're Earth's first line of defense against, like, alien invasion. Mm-hmm.
So what are the different organizations that we have here? You got Stormwatch. You got – what's the other organization that that Angela stole the technology from?
Io.
So Io is, like, in control of the Earth. Stormwatch is in control of everything else. Is Io a throwback to the old stuff at all?
Yeah. So Io was also in the original. I don't remember Kaiser being the head of Io, but I could be mistaken. Because I remember Kaizen – so there was a book called Cybernary. Oh, you never read Cybernary? Yeah, it was awesome.
I haven't read any of this stuff.
It was really odd. So Kaizen is Kaiser Gamora, and there was an island, the island of Gamora, that he and his brothers ruled, and he ended up killing his brothers to take over the throne of this island nation. Matter of fact, they're pretty big in an arc of Stormwatch. Actually, a couple times. Matter of fact, Paul, you might have read it. I think it might be the first or the second arc. There's a couple of members of Stormwatch that get kidnapped, and they're taken to Gamora. You don't see Kaiser there, but they're taken to the island. And it's really weird. Like, he looked like Fu Manchu.
Yeah,
and they had...
He was in Authority Volume
1. Yes.
Yeah, I do remember that.
So that's Kaiser.
Okay.
And
wait, he's running Io?
He's the one that runs Io in the Wildstorm.
Holy Christ. But I didn't put that together at all.
Yep.
Because he doesn't have the same look.
He doesn't.
That's probably why it slipped my mind.
And I mean, he also didn't have a boyfriend, which I'm trying to figure out who that character is.
I love it.
Because I think out of all the major characters, the only one we haven't seen is Jackson King, who was the leader of Stormwatch, right underneath Bendix. So you have Bendix running the whole organization, and then you had, like, different Stormwatch teams. So Jackson King was Battalion. He was in charge of Stormwatch Prime, which was the main team that the book was focused on. We haven't seen him, but he had a brother who looks a lot like this guy. So I wonder if that's King's brother.
So then who is the other guy? Is it, what was his name? Marlo?
Yeah. And so the third guy is Marlo, who's the head of, the Wildcat team. Okay. In the original book, but he was also an entrepreneur, which he is here as well. And I want to say it's Orb Industries, but Orb is something else. God, what's
Orb
the name
is Exo.
Yeah. Orb is Exo. I can't remember the name of his company, but he also runs an organization, and he's a tech mogul. Matter of fact, they reference it in this book. Like, he created the smartphone and some other tech that, like... I think there's even a panel where they have, like, an ad for, like, one of the cell phones that his company created. But it's, like, it's the phone that everybody uses, right? So he's, like, also a Steve Jobs analog.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was big in the Joe Casey, Sean Phillips run. Like, he was showing a lot of future tech, and didn't it become like everyone's using our device and now we can monitor everyone?
Yep.
Like, there was definitely a big brother vibe to him.
Well, and that's what's interesting about this, because I think Ellis has taken a lot of that stuff that Casey was doing in his run, because he's doing, like, the corporate espionage thing, right? Like, in this book, you have three different like huge organizations that run different parts of the world, and they're constantly stealing secrets from one another.
Yeah, it's the best Cold War comic book I've read in ages.
And that's why the whole thing with Angela saving Marlo is a big deal, right? Because the tech that she used to build her suit while working at Io is with Io Tech, but Io stole the tech from a downed ship that Stormwatch had. And so now that she can get into the suit and she saves Marlo, it's on the news. And that's why Stormwatch gets involved. That's why Bendix comes down and talks to Trelane, and Trelane has Zealot go out and find out what's going on. And then you've got some other things popping in. So they show, what's the team? When the Wildcats show up to, quote-unquote, rescue Angela, right? So it's Grifter, Voodoo, and Void show up at the bunker to try to, like, to thank Angela for saving Marlo. And then, like, that team shows up. What was the name of the team?
They were like mercenary cops type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. They were very stormtrooperish.
They were very stormtrooperish, and they always like go out into threes. Those were callback too. So those were like the shock troops that were kind of like the main bads in the Gen 13 book, which they haven't referenced her yet. But they were led by Ivana Bayul, who worked for IO. Doing all the like the genetic testing, and that's where Gen 13 came from. And you know, that's also like the Michael Cray connection, because Michael Cray had a daughter who was in one of these teams that IO experimented. But they haven't shown her yet. I don't expect them to, right? Because we're just wrapping up the second arc with 25 issues. I'm assuming they're the all six. There's plenty of more time to bring in some of these.
Do you expect Ellis to bring in all of these characters, or are you fine with him just sort of cutting out 20 or 30% of the previous characters and like, I'm going to create my own?
No,
I could see him going either way.
Yeah, I'm good with it. And I think when they first talked about the book, they did mention it was going to be kind of like Wildcats heavy, because they had plans to do other offshoots. And I know that we've got the Michael Cray one, but I thought that we're going to do a few more somewhere along the way. So I don't know if like maybe Michael Cray is a mini while this arc is going on, and then when the next arc, Michael Cray ends and something else takes its place. Because Michael Cray is also titled The Wildstorm Michael Cray, which of course makes it easier when you order it because it's in the same spot.
Sure.
But I thought that was interesting. So those are the organizations. Whatever Marlo's group is, which I can't remember, you've got IO run by Kaiser, and you've got Stormwatch run by Bendix. But there's a lot that's not explained in this first arc. You start getting some hints of it throughout, right? Like, there's a couple of weird panels that seem out of place. You start getting some more revelations in the next arc, and I'm assuming as the book continues, we'll get more of that. There's a couple panels with Voodoo. Those are the ones that are really out of place. Because it's like a commercial for something.
She's walking through all the different like technology, basically.
Yeah.
But that part had me totally lost, but I liked it.
Yeah, same here.
And you don't get anything else from that, right? The rest of this arc. You do get a few more of those kind of things in the second arc. But again, still not explained.
Wasn't there a pullback on like you see like stars in the sky and it's felt like the camera was pulling back to like reveal a spaceship or satellite or something. It was just like, what is that about? And then all of a sudden they go to upstate New York.
And in the second arc, you pull back even further.
That's just so fascinating. Even if there's payoff, it's neat to let the imagination go.
Well, and I'm sure there's going to be payoff, right? Because as a Wildcats fan, I know these guys are aliens. Spoiler alert.
Oh.
Sorry to spoil a 30-year-old story. But I know these guys are aliens. But we start getting hints of that, right? So you've got that one demonite that shows up when Zealot's investigating the bunker. You've got that out-of-place scene with Voodoo. And then that last panel, she's got a demonite arm.
Yeah.
Because in the original, she's half demonite. So I thought that was cool. And then you got like other things that kind of seem out of place, but they help you follow the story. And the stuff that I'm referring to is whenever Jenny Quantum shows up, which is the girl that's got the British flag t-shirt, the black shirt, and then it's got the flag in yellow.
Was she in the first arc?
She was.
I must have missed her.
She was.
I think I might be rereading this arc tonight. So can I say literally the one panel of this that I didn't like?
Sure.
What's the name of the guy that runs IO?
Kaiser.
So his boyfriend, he's like at home, they're having wine and stuff. So do you think his boyfriend is so clueless about what he does? Like, he has a sense of what's going on. He was there when Crazy Lady came and talked to them. He doesn't seem stupid. But then there's this panel where he says, so how did Crazy Girl get robot skin inside her? Oh my God, that is actually something I just said. God, that is the worst. I hate that type of writing. That's the only instance of writing that I absolutely hated in this.
So,
he knows enough.
I have a question.
That's just a cringeworthy panel for me.
All right, so I think at first glance, it appears like a badly written panel. But I wonder if he doesn't know a whole lot more he's letting on. I'm not wondering if he's like a Stormwatch spy, right? Because it almost seems like he's playing extremely dumb on purpose to me. And I only say that based on the corporate espionage stuff that I'm seeing and based on how I know Ellis develops characters over time, that I don't feel like little details like that go unnoticed to him. And it almost feels like it was done on purpose.
I just mean the second speech bubble there is what bothers me. The first one I'm okay with. The panel before that, he says, she has robot skin inside her, and then she turns inside out. Miles, your job is so utterly messed up sometimes that even I don't have the words. But he just said a very good description of kind of what happens. Then he says, so how did Crazy Girl get robot skin inside her? Like, that's the craziest thing that he said, that now he has to stop and comment on his own speech. In surprise, that just bothers me. That's the only thing that bothers me. Okay, I just had to say, because that's the only thing that bothers me in this whole thing that I love.
That's fine. Like I said, while it may seem like it's written badly, I think it serves a purpose. That's all. And I think if you see it that way, then it doesn't seem as bad a writing. Because he's playing dumb.
I read it completely the opposite. I read it like somebody who is on the gravy train married to a billionaire. And being like, I'm not going to shake this, like, I'm not going to rock this boat. Because I'm sure there's plenty of people in real life that do exactly that.
Yeah, except now he has, like, unlimited access at IO.
But I don't know. I don't know anything about anyone's motivations, but that's also intriguing to me. So maybe I'm playing dumb too.
You know what I think bothers me about it is it drives me nuts when people say something or do something and then have to point it out to you, like you weren't just there listening to them. Like, oh, did you hear what I just said? Oh my God, I just said that.
Yeah, but people do that.
And I don't like it. I didn't even say it's bad writing. I just said I can't stand that panel. I had to think about that for a minute because you were focusing on the, you know, whether or not it's bad writing. And, so I stopped and thought about it. It's not that I think it's bad writing. I just don't like that panel. I don't like it when people talk like that. So that's what it is.
That's fine.
You've all worked me through it.
What else? What else you got?
Oh, man. There's so much. It's funny because when we kind of broke this down, my first thought was, wow, I feel like there really wasn't a lot that happened in those six issues when we looked at it one way. Then you look at it another way, you're like, oh, my God, there's so much stuff and we've hardly even talked about it. It's all so good. There are so many characters that I want to see more of and know more about. And, you know, you get the characters you want to see get some comeuppance because they're just dicks. Michael Cray, obviously, like, he's really interesting with his whole I'm going to die conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
You have the lady who comes to recruit him that I don't think that really went any further than that in this issue or in this arc, right?
Right, that leads into his book.
Yeah, so that, like, that's interesting. Obviously, that intrigues me for reading his book.
Does his therapist go into his book?
Yes.
Because, oh, I liked her a lot.
Yeah.
The two pages that they were in the park was some fantastic dialogue.
What'd you guys think about? Well, they never call her Void here. Adriana, the teleporter.
I like her. She's actually one of my favorite characters in this.
I want to know so much more.
Mm-hmm. I love the. I'm flipping around trying to find the panel, but it's like she goes off for her moment of solitude and takes everything off, and by everything that means like her face and her hair and everything, and she's just like she's form. I mean, before that, she gives like the little explanation of how basically she was destroyed and then she was saved by some being, and like thrown back to Earth, and then it's a while later that you get that her just like kind of moment of zen where she goes off by herself. I think it's after that. I'm flipping through trying to find it right now. But I kind of love that. It is after that. You get this. She goes in this room. She takes her face off first, then you just see the different panels with her dropping everything, and then she's just form. Just like, I don't know, like liquid metal look in there.
Yeah.
Playing with some elements or something. She's got some clouds on one side, some glowing red shit flying around.
I loved her conversation in the coffee shop. I thought that was really neat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what makes the book so good, right? Because you're getting all these like small character moments in this like big world expansive story.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's nice when a writer takes the time to do that kind of thing. Because, you know, like Paul, you were saying earlier how a lot of this is kind of directed by the action. And I think that's definitely true. But there's so many character moments.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying, because Nick was saying how the action takes you along even when you don't know what's going on. I think that's true, but the character moments are also a vehicle to take you along, like, so much in this. And there are so many redheads in this book. It's fantastic.
If you say so. I didn't see a single
one. Oh, they're all over the place. The dude that wears the red mask is a redhead. The creepy old dude's assistant's a redhead. Somebody else is a redhead. I gotta flip back. There's at least three redhead characters in this book.
So, Paul, what's up with the old guy who sent, who was it, Grifter? Through the portal and, like, go track her down. Bring Angela here.
Marlo.
Who, Marlo, who, like, what, give me what that character was in the original version.
Well, Marlo is the head of the Wildcats. He's not the team leader. Spartan was the team leader.
He's sort of like the Professor X.
Yes. Yes. Okay. He's like the Professor X. And then Spartan would be like the Cyclops. Matter of fact, in the original, he looks similar to Cyclops. And you do see Spartan in the second arc.
Okay.
But he's very different. I remember.
Who's the artist on this book?
John Davies Hunt.
His use of body language is fantastic, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's one thing that says a lot about the characters in this book is the body language. You see the, you know, the times when they're really tense. Like right now, the part where Angela's sitting at the table with Marlo, I think this is the last issue of the arc, and he's getting out the bottle of whiskey or whatever. Just her body language, like you could see like she's to the point of like being tired past being scared and is just ready to like give in and get an idea of what's going on. So she's like, she's showing her tiredness a little bit, but showing her like, I'm just ready to like relax a little bit, even though I'm in this crazy ass situation. There's so many moments through these issues that are like that, where the body language and the positioning say so much. And that's one thing that's so different between this and the books from the 90s to me is the way the art was in the 90s. It was all excessive and flash and, you know, too many muscles and pouches and big guns. But they didn't always, like, tell you anything more with the art. You know, it's and this, like, the art's more subtle, and they're able to tell you so much more. And that's why I, you know, was able to get into comics in the last 5 or 10 years is, you know, just the way they used art progressed, like, in general. And now going back, I could find stuff, you know, in the past that did a great job of it as well. But
yep, I agree. Great. Curious to know how you guys felt about the interaction between Michael Cray and Marlo when you finally see what happened that led to Angela saving Marlo falling out. Because like Michael Cray walks in, like his weapons aren't detected by anything. Marlo goes, he like pops out this thing from his arm, right? He's about to shoot Michael Cray. And Cray grabs Marlo's arm and the little thingy like disintegrates.
Yeah, there's a lot more there, I think, that we're not getting. Like, first of all, Michael Cray had bad intel, which seems pretty strange. Almost seems like maybe he intentionally got bad intel from somebody. And then Marlowe's device reacting like that, it's like, did it react? You doubt that his device reacted improperly because it was faulty. So why did it react improperly like that and almost kill him by throwing him out the window? I mean, by all intents and purposes, he should be dead, and it was really his own fault because his device that was there to protect him, I mean, he would have been dead if he didn't have it, I suppose, but his device is what would have killed him, throwing him out the window. It didn't even kill Michael Gray.
Wonder why.
I had to read that a few times. Not because I was confused. I just wanted to see how all the puzzle pieces were put there. And I've found out that the storytelling visually, it seems like Ellis is at a point where he wasn't 10, 15 years ago. The economy of his words is so much more measured than what it was 10, 15 years ago. He doesn't need tons of word balloons to let his ideas breathe. And I think he leans on the artist a little bit more, which is great. So I love the art in that so much that I went out and bought his Vertigo series. So, oh my gosh.
Vertigo series?
Oh, the hell? Clear Room?
Clear Room. Oh, Clean Room.
Clean Room, yeah, sorry.
Was that, is that Gail Simone's book?
It sure is.
Yeah, that's really
good. Yeah, started it.
Adding that to my hoopla list. So I was just flipping back and forth through. We're talking about how Michael Cray reaches for that, you know, Marlowe's protective device, whatever. And I'm flipping through, and this is he's sitting by himself. This is after he quit, and he's like flashing back through his life, and every panel just shows his hands reaching out doing something.
Mm-hmm.
I think those two things might be related.
Might be.
Yeah, in a way that hasn't been revealed to us.
I find that in the volume 2.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like they need to get that sixth issue out and then really put in the trade and then have a sale on that trade.
Yeah!
I'm sure they will.
Lazy bastards, they need to be quicker about this. I want to shoot comics now.
Can we go around and talk about any negatives of the title? At least the first volume?
Nope.
Come on.
Don't have any.
Ay, ay, ay. Not good at all.
I pretty much think I said my one negative. I didn't like that one panel.
Sounds to me like you've got some negatives, Nick.
I don't have a lot of negatives. I guess my only negative really has nothing to do, especially honest to God, I feel like his writing style he's figured out the art of storytelling without having to write down. Like, he can express a hell of a lot more in this medium. He can express a hell of a lot more with less words instead of I have to vomit out all. Like, I would love to see his script. My guess is his script is not like a script from The Authority back in the day. It seems like he's controlling, but not to the point where he has to, I want this page to have 8 panels on it. Like, no, I think he just leaves the pacing up to an artist. My only negative is I'm a little amazed that this book is not getting any traction publicly or in from reviewers. Like, there is no swell to this book. It's all
criticism, and enough people like it.
Correct.
Yeah.
it's a little scary because, like, when Snyder took over Batman, holy Christ, was there marketing, and like everybody and the sister jumped on this book, and it was a groundswell for Court of Owls. And this book is just like, how can this, like, I would get it if it was like on an uber small publisher. No one knew who Ellis was. Like, I would get it if everything was a no name. Then I wouldn't be like, oh my God, no one is reading this. But like, it doesn't even feel like DC is pushing this book.
Well, I don't know if this is the kind of book that pushed like that. Like, first of all, the characters aren't Batman. Like, I don't care how popular these characters were in the 90s. These characters don't mean shit in the grand scheme of things now. You know, it's like they're dead characters, essentially. This book is challenging, and the kind of stuff they push is, like, in general, is pushing to comic readers that aren't reading to be challenged. They're reading to just buy what's hot and popular and the big names and stuff like that. Like, the big publishers push the easy stuff. That's just how it is. So stuff like this is going to have any success because of the people that do read it, that talk about it. And it's going to be, I mean, look at like Hawkeye with Marvel. They didn't give a damn about that book. That book made them give a damn about it. And by the time they gave a damn about it, they had ruined their relationship with Fraction, and then it had a shitty ending. Just to, you know, how the book came out towards the end and everything. And sometimes a book forces the publisher to stand up and take notice, and then, you know, give it its due attention. You know, Marvel certainly took advantage of the success of Hawkeye afterwards by trying to copy it poorly, repeatedly. Yeah, this book, like, how are they going to push this? Nobody knows any of the characters. The people that do know the characters have, like, 7,000 comics that are worthless in long boxes in their closets.
Yes, I do.
Of these characters. Exactly. You know, so, I mean, Martin's going to find this. People like Martin are going to find this without being told. Everybody else, like, the only way they're going to find it is because it's a good story.
It's just a damn shame, because I look at, like, Jonah Hex, and that had a huge, long run, but, essentially, like, it never really increased the readership base. And I feel like that this book falls exactly into the same bin. Like, it's going to have 25 issues. It'll have a hardcore fan base, but it will not, like, venture out or make any swell whatsoever, which is really frustrating.
Yeah, that's going to be how it'll be. It'll probably, like, stuff like this, if it has success, it's going to be like, you know, Family Guy was a funny cartoon when it first came out. Like, in the vein of, like, those kind of comedy cartoons. But it died off because there weren't going to be enough people getting into it, you know? But then after the fact, people bought the DVDs like crazy. And that was back before it was really easy to get TV on DVD, you know, let alone streaming didn't exist back then. And it was so popular that they brought it back and ruined it over the course of several years. And I think it's still probably running and got awful by now. But I mean, that's TV. They don't mind taking a property and beating it to death, and people will watch it because watching something is really, really easy. But with something like this in comics, it's going to do its thing. If it's successful enough to run through its course, that's a win for us as readers, as opposed to a title that just can't even survive, can't even make it to the end because it doesn't sell enough. If it does that, that's a plus. Then it can continue to sell in different ways, in trades and digitally, and more people can discover it over time. And then down the road, you can look back at it and be like, look at this title or this series that, you know, grew in popularity over time because people kept on discovering it. And then it, like, down the road, it can have a bigger impact on comics as a whole. But I guess it's never going to have the kind of success right now that a mainstream, you know, easy to sell comic is going to have.
I guess I'm just going to have to be happy that DC committed to 25 issues, and to know that comic book probably, I highly doubt, it's going to get canceled before 25 issues comes out. So just enjoy the 2 years that you have it. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And especially with like Warren Ellis on it, you know, the right. Odds of it going south probably would be more like you guys were saying, if Warren Ellis wanders off at some point, you know?
Yeah. It'll be him wandering off before them cancel. I'm sure Warren Ellis, there's no way he doesn't have it in his contract that I will get paid for 25 issues, whether or not they get published or not. Like, you will pay me that money.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, like, they're taking a chance with it, right? And you have it from the cover, too, because the issue numbering is part of the logo. Right underneath the logo, you've got the 1 through 25, and whatever issue you're on is in red.
Right. Yeah, it's part of the design.
Right.
It's really frustrating to go back to, and I've beat this dead horse before, you go back to like Vertigo. And when Vertigo was in its heyday, they could throw absolute dog crap and slap a Vertigo logo on it, and people would buy it. You'd have a certain amount that people would just be like, I'm buying that because it's Vertigo. I trust it. And I'm just pissed that the Wildstorm icon does not have that same passion. And I hate to say it, like, when push comes to shove, like, I don't see Warren Ellis out there pimping his own book. I see the artist. When I go to his Twitter page, he talks about it a lot, and he'll retweet you. If you mention the comic book, he retweets it, or he'll make a comment to it.
Well, Warren Ellis has creator-owned stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's going right now. So if you have creator-owned stuff, and you have stuff that you, just like you said, you probably have a contract and you already got paid for it, and you're Warren Ellis, not the artist whose name I still can't remember after it being mentioned several times.
John Davis Hunt.
Yeah. They'll say, I'm going to check out his other series too, so eventually it'll stick in my head. Yeah, he needs to get his name out there, so of course he's going to pimp everything he's doing. Warren Ellis ain't got to pimp this shit. You know, he's going to talk, if he talks about anything, he's going to talk about, I don't know, creator of, like I know Martin mentioned Shipwrecked, which apparently he got bored with. he's going to talk about the, you know, the other stuff that that is his, that's all his.
For sure.
Yeah,
it's just, it's, like I said, I'm just beating a dead horse. It's just frustrating that, like, Wildstorm doesn't have that cachet anymore.
Well, but I mean, what does? Right? Like, the top-selling book now does less in sales than the worst book did 30 years
ago. Hey, I can guarantee you when the Vertigo imprint comes back, there's going to be a decent percentage of people that used to read that in the heyday, and they will immediately jump right back on.
Yeah, but
so Vertigo
is still tighter knit to DC, though. Like, I mean, I know it's not like it's DC's Vertigo or something, but Swamp Thing's been in both. You know, I mean, when Sandman first started getting published, it had DC comic characters in it. It had Justice League in the first arc.
And they stopped that shit real quick.
Yeah, because they realized that Neil Gaiman knew what he was doing. But yeah, I mean, Vertigo's always been a little bit tighter knit to DC proper, whereas like Wildstorm is just some shit from the 90s they bought.
I get it. I mean, it's the same thing with Valiant. You're going to have a certain fan base that will jump on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is you have to grow that fan base. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem everybody's got, though.
I would love to see Paul Cornell come back and do another something else within the new Wildstorm universe. That would be fantastic.
All right, let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts? You're not reading Wildstorm, shame on you. That's my final thought.
I want more.
Yeah.
And I'm just amazed at how unbelievably great it is. Yeah, I love reading it in trade because I would hate to sit there and count down the weeks for the next issue.
Look, there's two books that come I read immediately when they come. One is the Wildstorm. The other one is the greatest comic book of all time, Astro City.
Ooh.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
It's not dead. It's still going to be coming out in trade format.
Yeah, I know.
Quit complaining about still having something you love.
Dude, I've been reading Astro City for like 20 years. It's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, final thoughts?
I'm really in tune with Nick on this. I really enjoyed this. And this, like, not only is this, like, something new for me to like, you know, it's one thing to read, like, a random Image title or something like that. That's not the same feeling as something like this is, where there's more breadth to it. It's not just one story that somebody made, you know? So I'm excited about what this opens up to explore, just like in what's coming out here, but also it being a gateway to me check out, you know, get back into Planetary, check out the Authority, maybe try to read that god-awful 90s Wildstorm again.
That's actually, I'm with you, Paul. Even if it's subpar Wildstorm stuff, I bought a lot of it when there was a huge sale on Comixology, and I can't wait for me to dive headfirst. Even if it's mediocre, it's just going to flesh out what he's doing right now. And to go back and reread The Wildstorm that we're talking about, I have no problem going back and reading this a second, a third time.
Yeah, and I mean, Martin knows that I rarely ever reread stuff very quickly, if at all.
Same here.
I think I'm going to read this again before my Hoopla time on it is up.
Yeah, I have thousands of trades waiting for me on Comixology, and I would happily go back and reread this in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
God, wait till you guys read Volume 2. There is, all right, the single best action sequence I've ever seen in a comic book.
Is there a big bad, or is it just a big bad of alien invasion?
Well, the thing is, with this book, who is the big
bad? Okay.
Is it Marlowe? Is it Kaiser? Is it somebody?
I just didn't know if it would be Dr. Doom directing AIM, or is it just the mysterious AIM?
Nope, we don't have that.
The faceless, nameless AIM, you know?
All right. You have been listening to the Nerdy Legion Comfy Couch Podcast, brought to you by Audible. What? A sponsor? Shame on these guys. Listen, we've been doing this for 300 years, okay? We deserve a dollar once in a while. You can head on over to nerdlegion.com/audible and sign up for a free trial and get a free book. And guess what? Even if you want to keep your trial, you get to keep your free book. So you're telling me you don't like free stuff? Shame on you!
You get it forever, too.
You get it forever.
I still go back and listen to my first Audible book sometimes.
Dude, I've been an Audible member since like 07.
Marvel The Untold Story was the first Audible book I've got.
That's great.
And I've re-listened to that. And you know what? Why the hell would you want to read one of those Word books and waste all your eye strength on that when you could listen to it?
Yeah,
and read a comic book.
Listen to real books, and save your eyes for comics.
But Paul, my eyes get really tired when I read wordy books like that. What can I do?
You can go to audible.com/nerdylegion and you could try a free book, and then you subscribe, and then you'll be happy forever instead of just once.
That's a good tagline. They should run with that.
I like it.
You can find Paul, our intern, at Who's Paul. You did good, Paul. I'm proud of you. You can find Nick at Nick Webmore. I am at Geekbind. The show is at Nerd Legion. We'll be back next time. Bye!